rain is not as near as big a factor as wind.
Wizardry and sorcery and dragons, all that stuff is not my deal.
Welcome back, another week of Game of Thrones podcast. Aaron Falk, Chris Camrani, here with the one and only Gordon Monson, Salt Lake Tribune columnist. Guys, how nice do you think Kyle Whittingham's house is?
Gordon might know, so we don't know. But I mean, if he was willing to put it, if he was willing to bet it, I mean, that he had to have been pretty confident in that decision.
Maybe it's a bad house. Maybe there's like a problem with the foundation or something. He's like, I got to get rid of this damn thing.
Maybe some black mold.
Even though people who are wealthy say that it's expensive being rich, when you're making $3.6 million or whatever it is a year, then you can dump the house, you know,
that's
and buy
true.
Another one. That's you know, it's all right. So
Utah goes into Seattle in a game that we admittedly gave them zero chance of winning last week, and they had a chance. I mean, they were there.
They probably should have won the game.
And
I mean, you're up a touchdown with 2 minutes to go, and you manage to lose in 2 minutes. That's a pretty big collapse, all things considered. And everyone's going to harp on the timeout and the defense. All they needed to do was get a first down.
Yes.
I mean, that there's so much that unfolded those last 2 minutes.
So Chris, you're there. You're on deadline. You're in. You know, you've got the atmosphere there. Can you give us a sense?
The atmosphere was. I'm beyond stressed out. I'm just like, hard to put into words for people who haven't gone through it, because you're basically just so up against the clock and you have to make sure that whatever you're writing is coherent and not just a terrible flowy mess of words. And especially on a game where people are going to care about it. If Utah went in there and got blown out, could have been cush, you know, could have set it up. You know, this is another loss in the long series of losses. But admittedly, I went into that game giving them not much of a chance. And all of a sudden, come the third quarter, I am having to put together 500 words on,
yeah,
Utah's going to win this game.
Well, from a neutral standpoint, I mean, very well maybe the game of the year for Utah. I mean, it was the most entertaining game.
It was the best game they played.
Yeah.
Right?
No doubt.
All right. So we have to go to the timeout. They run the ball. They're staying in bounds. They're clearly trying to run out the clock and go to overtime. They're on their own 30. Kyle Whittingham calls timeout.
At this point, on their own 28. They got to their own 30 after the first run.
And so now we're at 23 or 22 seconds, I think.
22 or 23, I can't remember, regardless.
Okay. The math, it seems to me, does not add up in Whittingham's favor, and he has doubled down on this timeout. Gordon, what were your thoughts when you saw the timeout?
Well, as I'm watching it, I thought, what the hell just happened? That was my first, you know, when you're taking a multiple choice test, they always tell you to go with your first reaction when you're not exactly sure.
Always C.
Yeah, that was my first reaction. I was like, what did they do? I mean, Chris Peterson's over there doing somersaults, you know, thanks for the timeout. Now you're giving me a chance. And of course they do it. But after I heard Kyle give his explanation, I had to give him some benefit of the doubt because he had been so aggressive throughout the entire game. And without that aggression, the Utes wouldn't have been in a position to win the game. I mean, going forward on fourth down over and over again, fake punts, onside kick, the whole thing. I was even at one point when they kicked, when they punted, when they were deep in their own territory toward the end there, and it was fourth and one.
Yeah,
I was
saying should have gone
for it.
Yeah.
I thought, is he going to go for it here? And I mean, 99 out of 100 coaches would tell you no way do you go for it in that situation.
No, yeah.
But I thought he might.
Yeah.
He didn't.
And in retrospect, that might have been the wiser decision.
Because if he gets that,
yeah, it's over.
Game over. Yeah. So it's like, yeah. I mean, what do you do? I mean, it's kind of crazy. That's one of those situations where I don't know if he was making stuff up or whether he really believed what he was saying, but certainly it blew up in his face.
Yeah, and it's, again, going back to, you know, nobody gave them a chance to win that game probably outside of their locker room, right? So maybe this is kind of a feeling of house money and you know, you're going to go and you're trying to win this thing in regulation.
And he said that.
But it's still, man, It does, like
the math. I mean,
if they throw on third down, they're both incomplete. They punt. I mean, he would bet his house that they're not going to go the length of the field to get a field goal. So what would he have bet that Utah was going to be able to do that? I mean, I guess you're playing for, like we were talking about off the air, right. A bad snap or just some sort of disaster,
interception or something like that.
A Nat Gay, baby.
Yeah, and then that's what he said. He said he knows Matt is good from 60. I don't know if the ball travels as well at sea level as it does here at that distance, but he was kicking well in that game. He broke the single season record in that game, and you know Kyle has confidence in Matt, but at the same time, I think it just boils down to the math of it all. Is the idea that you would have enough time to get through two more downs and a punt, and the clock starts when the punt hits the foot. So the idea of that you might have a few seconds, it's just really thin to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are gloomy people in the world. There are people who see the glass as being half full and half empty. I'm an optimistic guy. You know, I always look at the bright side or not. But if you're going to – if you're a Ute fan and you're watching that game – that was a better game for the Utes as a loss than it would have been had they played crappy and won. Because in a season like this, it really doesn't matter. You can talk about the bowl game all you want. How many teams make bowls nowadays?
Too many.
72 or something out of 119?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't mean anything anymore other than extra practice time. And that's not really, you know, the coaches always say, oh, you know, the seniors deserve the bowl game. No, the coaches want to work these guys and work the other guys for and prepare for next year.
Exactly.
But it really doesn't mean anything. So what I took away from that game, and maybe I'm being somewhat blind here, I walked away going, man, you know, Tyler Huntley looked pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And the Utes played better than I thought they were capable of playing. They made Washington look mediocre, I thought.
No, they did, yeah. Until the last 2 minutes of the game, they had Jake Browning in check. I mean – everything kind of went bad for the Utes starting at the end of that third quarter. Julian Blackman gambles and tries to pick off Browning, and Miles Gaskin gets right behind him and runs for a touchdown. Up until that point, they had nothing going for them.
Yeah.
And this was a Utah defense down Chase Hansen, Kylie Fitz, Marquise Blair, Casey Hughes. Some other guys were banged up. So the fact that they went there and were able to put in that sort of defensive performance was very impressive, and I agree with you, Gordon, about Tyler. I think if you want to look at a barometer game, it can start from that Washington game for Tyler, because that game is going to be the most important game for him going forward out of this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, and those positives, I think, are why, you mean, Gordon, you touched on it, why bowl eligibility is, you know, important or valuable to them, is to get Tyler Huntley more reps. I mean, we talked about that last week.
Well, yeah, and even Tyler said, I mean, he wasn't the number one guy till the last week of fall camp. He was splitting number one reps with Troy Williams. So they had that rhythm, they had that groove in September before Tyler got hurt, but they never went through an entire fall camp with Tyler as the number one quarterback. So you would imagine they're still learning the tendencies of this kid, and I think three more weeks with Tyler as a quarterback going into next season would do them very, very good.
But Gordon, I mean, you're a glass half full, the eternal optimist.
Of course.
Apparently not all Utah fans are. Were you surprised? I mean, you have a column today, you know, defending Kyle Whittingham, at least, you know, defending Kyle Whittingham's tenure and saying it would be crazy to fire him.
Right.
You surprised at all that, you know, given, forget the start, the 4-0 start of the season or whatever happened, just the sustained success that they have had, that you're even writing about that at this point?
Yeah, I was surprised to hear from so many Ute fans who had that opinion. Get rid of Kyle Whittingham. I was surprised by that. At first, I thought it was just a couple over here, just somebody joking around or whatever. But correspondents kept coming to me. It's time. He's complacent. He doesn't care anymore. Blah, blah, blah. And I was just going, wow, that's really, really interesting to me, because Kyle Whittingham has brought the Utes through the most difficult challenge that program has ever faced, namely playing Pac-12 competition week in and week out. And the Utes are a tough team. They play good football, usually. Every once in a while, there's a mistake that screws some things up. I get that. But you talk to the coaches around Pac-12 and talk to them about Kyle Whittingham and the Utes, Nobody wants is eager to play this team or play against that coach. And so, I don't know, I was surprised by some of the reaction of folks. I know that Kyle has a lot of supporters as well. But the U program is one to be proud of, not to talk about dumping your coach at this particular
time.
Well,
and of all the things to dig him on complacency, after a game where he went for it on fourth down three times, got it three times, attempted an onside kick, and a fake punt. So, I mean, what's the complacency argument? That's what I don't really understand. It's like, if anything, he's maybe gotten his head a little bit too much because he changes offensive coordinators every year. So he's on the look for the answer. I don't understand the complacency argument.
The other thing about that is that this year, the Utes have – I understand that in past years, November has been a disaster. They start strong. They end up ranked almost every year, and then it sort of falls apart from there. This year it started in October, and then you have these problems in November. I understand it. People are frustrated because they're fans. That's what fans do. They're emotional. They're
fanatics.
Yeah, they're nut jobs. They really are. Let's say it the way it is. And some of them are downright intolerant. You just can't even get at them. But anyway, you know, Kyle Whittingham has done a lot of good things, and that should be understood even with the frustration. If this pattern continues and he goes 2-6 in conference, 2-7 in conference for the next 2 or 3 years, then I get it.
Sure.
And I understand it. But at this point in time, he's bridged a gap. The Mountain West was nothing compared to the challenge they face now. And in my column, I said that, and this comes across as being sort of a slam on the Utes, those undefeated teams they had were good teams, but had they played in the Pac-12, they wouldn't have gone undefeated.
No.
No way.
No, they barely inched by New Mexico and Air Force that year they went undefeated.
Yeah, so it sounds like I'm slamming the past, but this bridge, this gap that's been bridged by Kyle Whittingham is a very, very difficult one to do, even though I do get the frustration because people think, okay, now the recruiting has increased, it has bettered, improved, but they're still going up against teams that are ahead of them in recruiting classes, at least the rankings every year.
Yeah, and just, I mean, practically speaking, you're looking at 3 more years on a contract at $3.6 million. And boosters, you know, I'm sure the Crimson Club is a little more flush with cash than they have been in the past, but I don't get the sense that there's any appetite to pay that sort of buyout for.
I will say this. I do think that Kyle Whittingham will retire at a reasonable age.
Yeah.
He's not a guy. I think he's got a lot of living to do, and I don't think he's going to drag this thing out from now for the next 10 years or something.
Yeah, they would have to nosedive for him to get fired, in my opinion.
Or for him to even walk. This is what I'm predicting, I guess, and I don't know it for a fact. Just based on conversations with people who are close to him, I wouldn't be surprised. What is he now?
58 today.
50, really?
Yep.
Happy birthday,
today.
Kyle, no matter what all the detractors are saying about you. You know, by the time he's 62, 63, I could see him floating on a boat, floating on a raft somewhere.
That's what, doing some fly fishing on the Provo?
Yeah, this contract goes through the end of 2020, I believe. And the deal that he negotiated, his latest extension, was not a raise. It was like maybe a small raise. Got a few more tickets. It was a retirement plan. Mm-hmm. It set him up for this sort of, you know, long-term 10-year position where whenever he decides to retire, he's going to still make a lot of money from the University of Utah.
He's set
as an
life,
advisor.
Man. Yeah, he's set.
So,
but I don't think that makes it any easier for him. See, this is an interesting thing. What do you guys think on this? I wrote a column earlier that his demeanor after games has been remarkably calm. Is that what people are keying off of, that they think he doesn't really care as much because he's not a raving lunatic after losses?
I think that could be it. I think there's also some that people are conflating maybe the reality of being the University of Utah, being a university in Salt Lake City and playing, you know, recruiting against USC, UCLA, Oregon, and playing in that tough of a conference with that complacency where, you know, try as you might, and you're going to have some very good seasons, but probably, I mean, maybe this is your fate on some level. You're not going to be the top of the Pac-12 every single year.
Arizona State's been in the Pac-10 for 40 years or something. They've never made it to a Rose Bowl.
It's just that hard.
Arizona State has Arizona.
Arizona, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing that, okay, look, I made the mistake once. When Ron McBride was here, I stood up for him, and I was defending him to some extent. And then they got rid of him, and Urban Meyer comes in, and magic happens, right? Good things happen. And so from I thought the youth program had reached sort of its level, and I told myself I will never make that mistake again where I underestimate that university because it is a terrific university. It's got some terrific advantages. It's a wonderful place to live, even if some kids might not know that, relative to measuring it against SC.
Right.
Or some other places. And so I think it is a football program that can thrive, how should we say it, be respectable and then maybe thrive on occasion.
Yeah, sure. And I think that's completely fair.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to knock the program or the university or even the city. This is my home. I love it. But you are competing with perception as you're recruiting those kids, and that's I think a challenge that's hard to overcome. So you combine all those things, and if you're not achieving, if you're not always gaining ground, if you're not always flirting with the conference championship, then people think, hey, we've stagnated, and we need a change.
They've been spoiled. I mean, Urban spoiled them, Kyle spoiled them. And that's fine. Their expectations are sky high. That's what you want out of your fan base. But the reality is, to your point, is that you're now in a conference where anybody can be anyone on any given week.
Yes.
And that's the difference between playing in the Mountain West, where you should win darn near every week. And sometimes that was tough enough, even though they did have the undefeated seasons. But against you, and I've seen this for years, going back to the 60s. When it was the Pac-8, a team goes into someone else's building, and you think, oh, man, this is the superior team by far. Next thing you know, they're leaving with a loss. It's a difficult place. Even though I don't think the Pac-12 is all that great, I think it's balanced.
Exactly.
From top to bottom, it's not easy to beat these teams. And ask the team, I mean, this doesn't mean anything because it's not horseshoes or hand grenades or anything, but think about the good teams in the Pac-12 that the Utes were right there to beat. Now, some people say that's a compliment to Kyle Whittingham, and some people want to rip him for it as though it's some sort of weakness that he can't win the close games. But they were tough against USC. They were tough against Washington. They were tough against Stanford. Yeah, exactly.
And it shouldn't go understated that USC and Stanford – Tyler Huntley's not your quarterback in those games. And maybe the result stays the way it does, but the fact that you had to get your backup, even though Troy Williams was a starter, ready for two of the hardest games of the year, that will go a long way when you revisit this season, I think.
I agree. I mean, so you touched on it with the McBride situation, and obviously you have to be on the lookout for, talent and not stagnating, but do you really see? I mean, there's so many other examples of people that schools that make these changes because they feel that they've stagnated and they don't get better from it, or they get better briefly. And I mean, I'm talking about it with a friend the other day. Like, if Dan Mullen, if they bring Dan Mullen in somehow, like is the University of Utah going to be substantially better off than if Kyle Whittingham's that coach? And I don't think so.
I agree with that. Look at UCLA. What are they going to do? Who are they going to get? I don't know how that's going to work out for them. People talk about Gary Anderson, because there were rumors that he wanted to coach at Utah a long time ago. Kyle is solid. He's a good football mind. Anybody who's ever talked to him is impressed by his attention to detail. He's a smart guy. I'm not sure. I get it. For $3.6 million, people think, okay, you can get the next great coach in here. And maybe they can, but I just think Kyle Whittingham has done the heavy lifting getting this program to where it is now. So if he has another 3 or 4 years left, you're going to dump him? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
And this market and this school, this state is so unique, and it's so hard to recruit to. Not more difficult than, say, Pullman or Boulder, but the LDS factor – the Polynesian pipeline that Ron McBride started. These are things that if Kyle Whittingham eventually moves on, you have to find a guy that can A, recruit the best LDS athletes, and B, recruit the best local Polynesian and, you know, Polynesians all around the country, because that's what's helped this program rise to where it's become. And I know he's not on the same level as Lavelle, but, like, Utah football is Kyle Whittingham. Like, Ron McBride was a great coach, but, like, when you look at where Utah football is 20 years from now, people are going to refer to Utah football and think of Kyle Whittingham. The way BYU football, you know, was Lavelle.
So one of the obvious, you know, knocks, or, I mean, you had an interesting take on it, but the constant carousel of the offensive coordinator. We talk about this every week, but since Gordon, you're here, I'm interested in your thoughts on, you know, has Troy Taylor done enough to stick around next year? What are, in your mind, are sort of the pros and cons of that situation, possibly bringing him back, possibly not?
Well, you guys have probably talked about it, but you can argue with yourself. You ever do that? I argue with myself all the time.
Day.
You know, people look at me, what's the matter with you? You know, I'm carrying on this conversation. It's like the guy in Fiddler on the Roof. He's going on the one hand, on the other hand, you know, and that's what I do with that. And in that, there have been times this year when I wondered what the hell Troy Taylor was doing. You know, why did you make that call? That seems really odd to me. And it's not just me. I've talked to other coaches who have been watching the Utes and had similar concerns at times. On the other hand, there are other times when I think, wow, okay, that was pretty clever. That was pretty good, you know. And because there's been so much turnover at offensive coordinator,
yeah,
it seems to me like, are you going to disrupt that again at this point and start all over again? Is Don Coryell somewhere? And can he? Well, he's in the great beyond, I guess. But is there somebody like that? That would be the only reason I would make a change, is if there was someone that was just so undeniably great that I had absolute confidence that he was going to coach at the highest possible offensive level. Otherwise, you're going to disrupt again? I don't think so.
Well, and I think there was Ty Detmer got a lot of flack this year for being an inexperienced play caller at this level, and I think it's gone a little bit under the radar that Troy is a very, very young offensive coordinator. He was a high school football coach just a few years ago. So his learning curve is a little more steep in the Pac-12. He's facing better competition. And, you know, just drawing that, you know, experience watching that game in Washington, they're in the red zone twice, and they call quarterback draws on third and longs twice in the red zone, once inside the 10-yard line. Is that because Kyle doesn't want Tyler to force a pass into traffic and throw an interception? Maybe. But these are the little things where I'm like, hey, man, like, it's third and seven. Let Tyler roll out and find someone. If you score a touchdown in one of those instances, you're probably good in the end.
That's one of the things that's so curious about their struggles in the red zone, is when you have a quarterback like Tyler Huntley, if you roll him, then he can either run it or throw it,
yeah,
whatever's available to him. You would think that their percentage would be really high because of his ability, the duality to his talents, but hasn't really worked out that way. And whether that's a matter of inexperience on the part of Troy Taylor or whether it's a combination of things, I don't know. But to really change at this point after, what, 9 and 9 years?
Yeah.
You're going to go 10?
Yeah.
Or 11, whatever it is. I think they probably will stand pat, but I don't know that for a fact.
Obviously, one game left to get bowl eligible. You know, regardless of what you think of the value of all of that, just looking at the competition, what are your keys to this one? Is it? I mean,
this game
is going to be a letdown.
Well, I mean, first year in the Pac-12, Utah wasn't a great team, but they go into that game against a horrifically bad Colorado team. I mean, they hadn't won a road game in almost like 3 years, 4 years. All they needed to do was win at home and get to the Pac-12 championship game for the first time ever in their first year in the Pac-12, and they lose. So this game's wacky. I mean, a couple years ago, Reggie Dunn had the two kickoff returns for a touchdown. Every year it's close. I mean, Utah's had the edge the last few years, but I think it's a crapshoot. I think it's a toss of the coin, to be honest with you.
What's the line on it? I think the Utes are +5 or something.
I thought it was like 10, but I could be wrong.
Are they a 10-point favorite?
Yeah. Well, last time, maybe I'm wrong.
Mm.
We're pulling it up.
Yeah, I shouldn't have brought it up if I didn't know.
10.5.
10.5.
Favored by 10.5.
Vegas is pretty smart usually, but again,
Washington was 17.5.
You never know, and I guess that's the beauty of it. See, that's the other thing for Ute fans who are frustrated right now. Just think about I'll call it a blessing, a football blessing, to be able to go into a game every single week with some degree of uncertainty slash excitement.
Yeah.
Even against Colorado, who, you know, I mean, I'm not going to try and, you know, build this up into some huge rivalry of some sort like they've tried to do, but it's exciting stuff to watch. I mean, I'm not a fan, so maybe I can appreciate the excitement more than the anxiety that a fan feels. But every week there's something worth seeing, even if it breaks your heart at times.
Yeah, and this game, I mean, it's easy. Whoever wins gets to go to a bowl game.
Yeah, for both of them.
Yeah. How healthy are they? They missed a lot of key guys. Darren Carrington was hobbling big time. He gutted it out, but, I mean, you could see him hobbling to and from the sideline. I think Raylon Singleton has stepped up big time. He's proven to be, you know, a guy that they can rely on these last couple games. Zach Moss, can you get him going? I think he's their most consistent offensive player. But, again, Tyler played his best game of the year. Outside of that one jump ball that he threw for no reason, which was a terrible decision, he was the most effective he's been in the throw game and on the ground.
So does Kyle get aggressive again in this game when he's a favorite?
I think
as opposed to an underdog by a major margin?
I think
margin?
He should. I mean, what do you have to lose at this point?
It certainly worked last week. I mean, relative to the way they played, not to the result.
Yeah, and those guys, they were pretty beaten. I mean, you could tell that they just had something snatched from them. That was the most despondent I'd seen those guys all year, even after the ASU stinker. Like, it was bad for them. So maybe Kyle just goes Riverboat Kyle again. I don't know.
Do it. I say
he's going to call timeout with 20.
More, more fake punts. And I say twice as many spikes. I'm here for penalties, too.
Yeah, Mitch. Yeah, that was.
What was that? I mean, I have no problem with what he did.
No.
I think that's college football, you know, to penalize him and lecture him.
The one time the kid gets to do anything other than what he does.
That was not in your face spike. It was a spike of excitement and it just being a college football player.
He spiked
player.
It like directly in front of his head coach. Like, what's he trying to do? Like taunt
Kyle. You,
Kyle. Thank you for letting me run.
I could have been the answer to your red zone problem. Give me the ball.
Exactly.
Indeed, man. That was a crazy moment.
Yeah, everyone likes to legislate everyone's fun on something like this, which
especially
makes no.
Especially in football, it's odd. Yeah. It just seems like it seems so counterintuitive for a sport that's predicated on hurting other human beings. It's like, make sure you hit him as hard as you can, but don't enjoy
be
it.
Be solemn.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, and well, that's a whole topic for another day, but that's another thing to argue with yourself over, isn't it? The whole goal is to hit somebody, another human being, as hard as you can.
As hard as you can. Make sure you dislodge that ball.
Be violent.
All right, guys. Well, we will cut it there. Thanks so much for listening. Gordon, thanks for spending some time with us.
Are we going to be back? Probably wrap up the end of the year.
Yeah,
year.
One way or the other. All we'll right. be back.
Okay.
I'm going to spike this
spike
damn ball.
Spike your computer right there. Woo! You did it.